The following is a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly presentation exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is sponsored by the Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network.
Good morning. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. I am your host, Dr. Carol Smith, Commissioner of Health and Mental Health for Ulster County. With me this morning is my co-host, Vin Martello, our Director of Community Health Relations. Good morning, Vin.
Good morning, Dr. Smith. Our topic today is very timely. As we know, we've all been deeply affected by the events in Parkland, Florida, and the events that happened prior to that, that led to some really tragic consequences. And today we have a very special guest, our own Chief of Psychology, Dr. Gerald Fix. And today we're going to be talking about the connection between mental health that may lead to violent behavior, with particular reference to adolescents and teens as they progress toward becoming hopefully healthy young adults. So Dr. Fix, welcome.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Before we get into the meat of the subject, can you talk a little bit about your background, how you got involved in psychology, what led you to pursue that field?
Sure. I've always had a lot of interest in people. I can remember as a kid knocking on neighbors' doors and trying to get to know them, even when other kids thought that they were kind of scary. And when I got to high school, if people told me things that were private that they wouldn't tell anybody else, I was kind of felt honored and really kind of felt that they were letting me know something special about them. But I didn't really think about a career in psychology until I went to college, and I was an undeclared liberal arts major, and as a prerequisite for a liberal arts degree, you need to take general psych, and I found that interesting enough to take another semester of it the next, when it came time for registering, and then I took another, and then I took another. So by the end of my sophomore year, I was majoring in psychology. And so after I got a BA, I worked with very severely emotionally disturbed children for a while. I worked with foster care children, and then I worked in a drug rehabilitation agency with adults and adolescents who were struggling with addictions. Then I finally went back to graduate school and continued to train and work with adults and kids on my way to my doctorate. So it has always seemed kind of natural to me. It seems more like what I'm supposed to do rather than anything else. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what brought me here.
And when you were a kid, did you charge your friends for the counseling? Like
no, it was all free.
Marbles or baseball cards or something like that?
No, it was I felt more like they were giving me something when they were telling me some things that were private.
Dr. Fix, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of confusion about mental health issues as they may present with respect to violent behavior. Would you give us just some understanding of, you know, mental health issues and violent behavior? Is there a connection necessarily? What is the distinction between the two? Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Sure. In the wake of a lot of these tragedies, one of the reactions that we hear coming from people talking about how to prevent them from happening again is to identify people who are mentally ill and to restrict those people's access to weapons or other kinds of means of acting violently. And in that way, the message comes across that mentally ill people are dangerous. And in fact, the research is pretty clear in indicating that people who are diagnosed with mental illness, especially severe mental illness, are much less likely to perpetrate acts of violence than people who are not. However, people who have been diagnosed with mental illness and have a history of violence are much more likely to act in a violent manner. But so are people who have not been diagnosed with mental illness, who have a history of violent behavior. So I think that that history of violent behavior is the best predictor to identify people who may act dangerous or be dangerous. Mental health or issues in and of themselves do not cause people to be violent. From time to time, everybody struggles with some symptoms of mental illness. And whether or not they have enough symptoms to qualify for a diagnosis does not predict violence in any way. But it's the behavior that is the best predictor.
Can you give us some idea of what are some of the predictors of violent behavior in children or adolescents?
Yes. There's a constellation of variables that the research has identified that correlate highly with kids who have the potential to act violently. And some of those include a lack of solid attachment to an adult who is a positive force in their lives, being alone, substance use, not just abuse, but substance use, poor academic performance or a change in academic performance, usually in a negative direction, chronic offending towards other people that causes harm, involvement with weapons, especially guns, a history in families of conflict and aggression, early delinquency, especially before 11 years of age, involvement with gangs, poor family functioning, and then that tandem of a history of mental illness and history of violence. And it's important to note that none of these variables individually predicts violence, but it is the combination of the variables and the quantity of variables that people exhibit that really starts to predict whether or not people develop violent tendencies. So the more of those variables that are in somebody's profile, the more we want to be concerned and try to intervene in a way that turns them away from violent behavior.
Can you describe some of those interventions that have been employed that may be particularly successful in helping to avert violent outburst?
Yeah. Two of the things that are most effective are building positive social networks through different organizations, whether it's athletics or therapy groups or something extracurricular that has a positive theme, can be scouting, it can be church-based. There are a lot of different ways that kids,
right.
Music,
art.
Sure, art. There are a lot of ways where kids can develop relationships with peers that are healthy. And those often take the place of the more negative kind of interactions that exist in gangs, for instance. Then we have mentoring from a concerned adult. And mentoring really can take a lot of forms, but it is the experience of knowing an adult who affords the child the opportunity to receive unconditional positive regard, which is tantamount to helping them feel good about themselves, feeling connected to other people, and feeling less and becoming less likely to act violently. Unconditional positive regard doesn't mean letting the kid do everything they want and being permissive in every way. You can set limits with a kid and still let that kid know that you love them or that you really care about them. So, you know, it's kind of accepting somebody regardless of their faults or their shortcomings. So that kind of mentoring, that kind of connection to a caring adult, a consistent caring adult, it really does insulate children from becoming violent and feeling alone in the world.
That's really interesting. You know, right here in Ulster County, as you know, Dr. Smith, we do the Youth Development Survey, which surveys substance use attitudes and behaviors. And we see time after time, we have a decade's worth of data now, that the most effective mitigating factors are what they call pro-social involvement, which is exactly what Dr. Fix just articulated. Involvement in community, involvement in family, involvement in sports, extracurricular activities, the arts, all those things, engaging in volunteer work, all those things that help a kid feel that they're really part of something larger than themselves, and really that's going to have a very positive influence. There's an article that really segues right into this, Dr. Fix, and it was in the New York Times a couple of days ago, and it really, really struck me. It's called "The Boys Are Not All Right," and the author is Michael Ian Black, and in this article, he brings forward the fact that of all the school shootings that we've had, all of them were by boys, and that that he really he makes some observations about the fact that boys in many ways have been left behind in, girls have gotten a lot of support. I mean, this is speaking very generally, talking about how, that they can do anything and that girls have consistently outperformed boys academically and otherwise. And that in many ways, boys are trapped in this very outdated notion of what it means to be a man and the rites of passage to manhood, and that it's about being tough and about being strong and toughing it out and not really discussing your feelings because that's to be seen as a weakness. He said, and let me just read you a section. It says that boys feel isolated, confused, and conflicted about their natures. Many feel that the very qualities that define them, strength, aggression, competitiveness, are no longer wanted or needed. Many others never felt strong or aggressive or competitive to begin with. We don't know how to be, and we're terrified. And that because boys don't have a model of masculinity that allows for fear or grief or tenderness or the day-to-day sadness that sometimes overtakes us all.
There's no doubt about it. Patrick Moynihan talked about that in the 1960s, how boys growing up without fathers really made them feel isolated in the world. And that contributes to boys looking for connections with other people, including gang involvement. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go so far as to say that boys are broken, as the writer of that article did. I think that by and large, most adolescent boys are just fine.
Yeah, says that.
Yeah,
he was just making a general observation.
I think that those kids who are in crisis or have the potential to become disturbed and violent are those who do become isolated and find no other way to establish their identity than through violent means and staking a claim to their identity by fantastic behaviors like violence.
Right.
So it's a really difficult question to answer as to why boys. Mm-hmm. We could talk about psychological theory and
right.
There's a lot of things that say that boys are much less likely to talk about their problems than girls, and one of the reasons for that is that girls are wired to socialize and boys mm-hmm. are wired to perform mm-hmm. and so the processing that girls are much more comfortable partaking in sometimes allows them to work through problems rather than act on them. So boys kind of externalize these issues and try to resolve them through behavior, where girls will talk about them more and mm-hmm. feel as if they've come to some resolution of whatever mm-hmm. might be mm-hmm. bothering them without resorting to any kind of violent behavior at all.
Interesting. We'd like to carry this forward right after this short break. We're going to take a short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio.
In emergency care, it's all about experience. At Health Alliance Hospital Broadway Campus, a member of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, it's another way we're investing in you. We're board certified in emergency medicine, nationally recognized in stroke care, and use telemedicine to give patients access to the region's leading specialists. Patients tell us we make their experience exceptional by treating them with the utmost respect. Health Alliance Hospital Broadway Campus, we're advancing care here. Visit hahv.org for more.
Welcome back. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Our special guest this morning is Dr. Gerald Fix, Chief of Psychology at the Ulster County Department of Mental Health. Dr. Fix, can you elaborate on what seems to be a common thread that characterizes individuals who have been guilty of mass shootings and that sort of violent outburst behavior?
You know, they come from a lot of different backgrounds, but the one thing that seems to be most prevalent to me in reviewing some of these cases is a sense of social isolation or alienation. People who have removed themselves from society for one reason or another. And for the younger folks, I think that may be a function more of mental illness and feeling ostracized for whatever reason and withdrawing. But then some of the adult shooters have also shown a lot of signs of social alienation. And for the older folks, it seems that alienation seems to breed a sense of anger with a group of people or society in general. And the violent acts themselves seem to be an act of vindication where they're seeking some sort of justice or retribution. With alienation comes a sense of being alone, and we know that people need to interact with other people to really have a strong sense of identity. And without that, I think that the people who have perpetrated these mass shootings are looking also to establish an identity for themselves, make a name for themselves, if you will. So they're not only seeking justice and trying to take out anger, but also, become renowned.
Dr. Fix, in terms of, I know you mentioned some of them, some of the traits before, but how does a parent or someone who cares about a young person know when a young person's behavior is part of the normal stages of development and might just be acting out versus when it really is something more serious and it warrants more attention?
That's a really good question. You know, adolescence is the most difficult time in the lifespan of development. So kids often will be angry. They have short tempers. They become depressed. They experiment with substances. They hang out with kids who their parents may not approve of. They do a lot of things that, it might be a cause for concern, but it isn't the kids who, act like normal adolescents that we really have to be the most concerned. It's when there's a pattern of behavior that causes concern and causes and makes it look as if the kid is more interested in engaging in negative kind of behaviors and hanging out with the wrong crowd and alienating themselves from family and positive friends that we have to become most concerned. It's really clear that all of the variables we talked about before might exist in people who never become violent. But when somebody has recently been acting in a manner that is injurious to themselves or to other people, or writing things, or showing a fascination with weapons, or violently themed media, then it is time to start having a conversation and really taking a closer look at whether or not the kid needs some help.
Mm-hmm. And that situation in Newtown in Sandy Hook with Adam Lanza was very illustrative of that, right? His mother sought to connect with him. The family was divorced. Mm-hmm. And sought to establish a stronger connection with him through guns. And here the kid is, he had autism, right? As I understand it. And then he's in mom's basement with the windows blacked out, watching violent video games all day, and upstairs is an unlocked cabinet full of guns. That's
yeah,
a toxic.
You know, I tell parents all
mix.
The time, it's okay to be involved in your kids' lives, even if you have to intrude. As you know, if you care about them and love them, you got to know what's going on with them. And when kids are isolating, you don't know what they're up to. And you, the reason that it's okay to intrude, if you will, is because you want to make sure they're safe, and you're telling the kid that you care about them. When a kid becomes obsessed with violence and all they do is play violent video games, shoot weapons, and does not have any pro-social or positive social interactions with other people, those are real clear warning signs that some steps should be taken to make that, to help that person feel a little bit more connected with other people and find other means of expressing themselves.
Mm-hmm. And I know it's hard to be an armchair quarterback because as a parent myself, I'm not as aware as I am of many of these things. I still fall short. But I remember after Columbine, something that struck me was that they interviewed some of the neighbors in the neighborhood where those kids lived. And they said, yeah, their parents were such good parents and they were so caring and whatever. But then the reports showed that the investigation showed that they were in the basement assembling like large amounts of explosives and ammunition and weapons. And is it more, does it require that parents be more proactively involved than just generally being good parents?
I suppose, good parents is kind of a qualitative statement, a lot of ways to define that, but I think it's really important for parents to be aware what their kids are doing and with whom they're doing it. And it's hard to fathom that a kid could be building a bomb or taking target practice on the property, and that seemed to be going on with the kids in Columbine for some time without the parents' knowledge. They also had a lot of social media posts and writings in journals. That stuff is around the house, because at some point the kids did go to school and they didn't take everything with them every day. So, it's okay for parents to let their teenagers know, you live here and I care about you and I want to make sure you're safe. I'm going to be in your room. I may not look in your room all the time, but I might go into your room and find out what's in there. It's really important to be involved and to let the kids know that I'm here to guide you and I care about you. And, you're not an adult yet.
And the same thing with devices, right? Mobile devices and social media. I say the same thing to my daughter. I want your passwords, not because I am not going to go in there on a regular basis, but every once in a while, I'm going to check and just make sure that there's nothing going on, because there's so much out there that is harmful and dangerous.
You know, it's really natural for parents to say, my kid would never act in a way that's harmful to another person. My kid's a great kid. But sometimes you need to do those things to make sure they're safe. And kids are really, really value their interactions with their peers. So the influence of peers for a kid who might not, really feel the need to express themselves violently or negatively to begin with. Over time, interactions with negative influences can creep into a kid's behavior.
Right.
And, keeping your kids safe is a parent's responsibility, and there's nothing wrong with doing that.
And what do parents do if they've noticed a pattern of behavior that's taking their kids potentially down a dangerous path? Where do they go? What do they do? What resources are out there in our community?
Well, I would certainly suggest that talking to the kid is the first step, but obviously adolescents are like to tune that out pretty quickly, even kids who aren't that disturbed. So reaching out to a professional who is accustomed to talking to children about problems, who has specific training in those fields is really effective. A psychologist, a social worker, a clergy member, even a teacher, an educator is often equipped to do that kind of intervention and make connections with the kid and refer them for services if they need it.
And there are plenty available here in Ulster County. many, many out there. Well, you know, this is a fascinating topic, and we could spend hours talking about this. But, you know, if your kid is needing help, get, you know, stay way involved in your kid's life on every level and get them the help they need if they need it. And hopefully we can all help keep our families and our community healthy and strong. And that's what part of Ulster Radio is about, Dr. Smith. And it's very good to have you here,
Dr. Fix.
Thank you so much for all the work.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department, sponsored by Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next week.